Heavens sakes, I lost my voice. Okay, I'll call this meeting of the House Early Childhood and Family Support Committee to order for Thursday, May 4th. Colleagues, today we're going to be talking about policy and budgets and how they relate and what kind of message you collectively want to provide me to take back since I serve on the education sub. So I'm going to open that informational hearing, and why don't, David, you come up first. We'll start the conversation with David. He says his presentation will only take an hour, so we have 2 hours.
Yay. Is that the chair you want to sit in, or do you want to sit in another one?
After long deliberation, this seemed like the most appropriate choice.
Okay.
Chair Lively, committee members, for the record, I'm David Mandel, the Acting Early Learning System Director. I'd like to begin by extending the sincerest apologies from Lindsay Capps. He was planning on being here today, and he got called into a meeting with his boss, so was unable to be here today. On his behalf and on the governor's behalf, I did want to share with you what I know he was hoping to say to this committee, which was just to reiterate the governor's deep commitment to early learning. That remains one of her highest priorities and a focal point for ensuring over the long haul that Oregon raises its graduation rates and also raises children and families that are prepared to thrive and succeed. As you know, the governor's budget very intentionally preserved all of the early learning investments, all the grant and aid programs at current service level, and the governor remains committed to doing her best to keep that commitment. So those are my words on behalf of Lindsay. So again, he apologizes for not being able to be here today. My understanding is that this hearing was set up today to provide an opportunity for this committee to have a conversation among yourselves about the early learning investments and early learning priorities. So Chair Lively asked me to be here, I think, just to provide a little bit of framing and reminding this committee of what those investments are and what some of the impacts of what's in the co-chair's target list would potentially be. What I was hoping to do is just give a little quick, and I know that some of this is material that that I've already presented to the committee and the committee's already discussed before. So the current service level for investments in early learning is about $250 million. That is a number that has actually grown over the last number of bienniums. Just a reminder, Early Learning Division itself is really only about at its fourth anniversary at this point, and our hubs are only really a couple years old. But those investments include the Early Learning Hubs, our Oregon Pre-K program, Preschool Promise, Healthy Families Oregon, Kindergarten Partnership Innovation Fund, Relief Nursery, and Focus Child Care Networks. Of that $250 million in current service level, about $8.8 million is for the Early Learning Division operations. You'll see only about 3% of that budget is operations, and the rest of it is money that really goes straight to communities and our partners to support children and families. The governor's budget also included $8 million in new investment in the early learning workforce, and I know that's something that we've also had a chance to discuss with you in the past.
So, David, just so we're all on the same page, so the current service level is the budget that we had in the last biennium increased to absorb whatever the roll-up costs are, whatever anticipated increases were?
Chair Lively, committee, that is correct. So in most cases, that's really just an increase in inflation.
Yeah.
The one exception is the roll-up cost for Preschool Promise was larger because Preschool Promise was rolled out in the second year of the biennium. So the current service level now includes services for 2 years instead of 1 year.
Thank you.
That's really the most significant difference between current service level and the legislatively approved budget of 2013-2015.
Okay, Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Lively. When you mentioned that most of the roll-up cost is due to inflation, would you describe the inflationary factors that are used?
Chair Lively, Representative Hayden, I'm probably not the best person to do that. That's actually done through a formula by DAS.
Okay.
So it's actually a very standard formula for doing that inflationary cost.
But we could request that.
But we can get you that information because it's...
Or I could tell you.
Okay. Why don't you tell us?
So the inflationary rate that we use in our budgeting system is based on the Oregon's gross domestic product. And so when we have production, our mills, our producers being more efficient with the what they produce versus the man hours that go into that, you get a gross domestic product that is higher than the rate of the income that the employees get. And so in Oregon, we base our general fund tax revenues off of almost exclusively personal income. There are some exceptions with lottery funds and whatnot. But you're basing your inflationary rate to your budgets pretty much across the board, and it's a big deal in healthcare, to a gross domestic product of the state, which is not tied to our tax structure. And when you have a tax structure that is tied to the income, generally, of the workers in the state, and our average hourly rate increase for Oregon from 2016 is 1.4%, and then we try and cover a 3.4 or up to a 4.3 gross domestic product for that time frame was a little over 4%. And you try and cover a 4% increase in all these budgets based on a 1.4% increase in tax revenue, that's a problem. And it will be a long-term cost problem until we have an honest discussion about either changing our tax structure in Oregon to where it's based on production of product, mm-hmm. or change our inflationary rate to where it's based on where we get our tax revenue from. It is a total mismatch. I'd love to have that conversation in more depth at some point.
Okay. Thank you for that. Go ahead, Jim. Sorry, I asked a question. I opened it up. I'm sorry.
I assume that was for internal conversation rather than a...
Yes.
It's applicable.
Yes, it is.
So this is just a reminder of what that breakdown of what that current service level actually looks like in terms of the program. By far, our largest investment is in Oregon pre-kindergarten, the Head Start model, preschool for 3 and 4 year olds, with now substantial investment in Healthy Families Oregon, and as well as in Preschool Promise.
Thank you, Chair. What was the operations, the division operation budget for last biennium?
I'll have to give you the Chair Lively, Representative Hack. I'll have to give you the exact number. It's about $8 million.
Okay.
There's a little bit more of an increase in the governor's requested budget because there were a few positions that the legislature were made permanent last legislative session and funded only for one quarter of the biennium, because the rest of the biennium they were funded through a grant source. So those didn't end up in being in the CSL. So to be honest, what's proposed in the governor's budget and actually in the co-chair's budget is a little bit more growth than that because of those seven positions that were only funded at one quarter last biennium.
Thank you.
But I can't remember the exact number, but the CSL budget for operations without the governor's requested budget to address that was pretty similar. This is just a slide of what we've seen in the co-chair's target list, just as you know, just give us give you a sense. With a couple of programs in that target list, which I realize is a conversation piece and not a final budget, but since it's on the table, it seemed like the appropriate vehicle for talking about what some of these potential impacts potentially are. OPK, organ peak intern, is maintained whole, but some substantial cuts proposed to early learning hubs, 20%, kindergarten partnership innovation fund, 20%, and preschool promise at 10%. It's worth noting that those three, and then also a 12% cut to Focus Child Care Network, those four, it's worth calling out, those are all resources that don't necessarily get spent by the hubs, but get directed through the hubs.
Right.
So that's a cumulative impact on the work of the early learning hubs. Just to give you a little bit of sense of, you know, some of the translation of what that would mean, probably about 304 families for healthy families not able to access those home visiting programs, probably about 372 providers over the course of the biennium who would lack that opportunity for professional development and growth, and what that impact is on children over the course of their career, and then also substantial reductions in the impact of kindergarten partnership innovation, and as well as about 300 children lost in preschool promise.
I have a quick question regarding your reductions to healthy families. I want to hear a little more about how that would be done. Would it be done by adjusting the MBQ, making it you had to have more risk factors? Would it be by you've never had waiting lists officially? How would that be managed?
Chair Lively, Representative Malmstrom, the honest answer is I don't have a full answer to that question at this point. I think what we would do is, if faced with that situation, the first thing would actually to start that conversation with the Healthy Family Oregon grantees themselves and talk about what would be reasonable ways with them to think about doing those reductions in a way that both has the minimum impact on children and families and is also sensitive to what we're seeing in differences in needs in communities.
Right.
But I think the strategy in all of these would also be to not simply make a decision from Salem and really engage those partners who are working with the children and families on how to do it in the least hurtful way. So, sorry, not a full answer, but that's at least, I think, what the approach would be.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I also wanted to talk about some of the parts of the co-chair's target list that aren't in the former early learning division budget, but are really crucial parts of the early learning system. The co-chair's budget fully eliminates Babies First, a home visiting program that goes through public health. And I apologize, I don't have exact numbers up here on that. And it also includes a $20 million reduction to employment-related daycare, eliminating the quality incentives tied to Spark, as well as probably eliminating about 1,000 families from accessing those child care subsidies.
Another question about Babies First.
Yeah.
It has, like, you know, 12 times, you know, more federal funds. And so I'm wondering why that was targeted versus some other reduction methodology.
Chair Lively, Representative Malmstrom, I really can't speak to what the basis for the co-chair's decisions were. I just, to be honest, don't know the answer to that.
I didn't know if it was from input from you folks or...
No.
Thank you.
And that's also not in our budget, but it's an impact on the early learning system, so I really wanted to highlight that.
So this is the train?
DHS and OHA.
So this is out of the. This is not directly out of the early learning budget?
These are not out of the early learning division's budget, but I think they're important to highlight because we're really thinking about, you know, we really want to be thinking as the Early Learning Council and as a partner from the Early Learning Division, how do we think about the impact of these investments on children and families, whether or not it happens to be our budget.
Go ahead. My question, to kind of go back to what Representative Hack said, is that when you cut people out of Babies First, then you have this huge bunch that now are going to be asking for, early learning sort of services because they're not getting those kind of services, you know. So it does have a really big impact.
And Chair Lively, Representative Malmstrom, I mean, what I have heard and what does seem to be the pattern in some of the cuts, but again, I really can't speak for the decision process. There does seem to be a little bit some focus on newer investments rather than older investments. And I did want to speak to that because I think one of the real issues that I think is before this committee is in something that I think we've really tried to engage this committee in conversation is the work to build an early learning system that's really happened in Oregon over the last 4 or 5 years. And you know, we talk about the impact of the 20% proposed cuts to the early learning hubs. You know, that's a place where it's harder to translate that into the exact number of children and families that will be impacted. But what I can tell you with a tremendous amount of confidence is that would take a tremendous amount of momentum out of the work that the hubs have been doing to bring these partners together and programs together so that they function in a really different way for children and families. So I think one of the questions is also, I know the legislature has to make some really hard choices in the current budget situation, but I think there's also, in addition to the direct impact on children and families this biennium, what is the long-term impact on what we're trying to do for children, families, working with communities over time?
Representative Bynum, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as I understand it, you don't really get to pick your cuts-ish, but do you have a decision matrix on how you would allocate the blob of money that you get? And the reason I ask is I would think, just kind of guide me here, that you would be evaluating your programs based on impact, whether they're rural or urban, whether you got a federal match, the long-term, short-term impact. I don't see how we can look at a chart and make that assessment effectively without some input from you. So what does the decision matrix look like, and who's controlling that?
Chair Lively, Representative Bynum, it's ultimately up to the Ways and Means Committee and then the legislature to make those budgetary choices. As part of the process, we were asked to submit 15% cuts to legislative fiscal and asked, as part of that, we did try to look at the impact on children and families and, you know, making sure that basic health and safety were preserved, but also doing our best to kind of maintain the momentum that we're doing. You know, I would say all of our programs, so there's really, I think, two questions, and I think this gets them back to Representative Malmstrom's question. All of our programs do have pretty broad statewide reach, and so one of the questions that we would have to address as the division is if we were given reduced budgets in those categories, what's the process for figuring out how to implement those cuts in the softest way imaginable.
Representative Huffman, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And blob is a technical budgeting term. I don't know if you David, I've heard the comment made that part of the reason for the cuts was because early childhood legislature had really stepped up and did considerable funding for the current biennium in comparison to previously. I'm sure in addition to saying, yes, sir, but that money was really well spent, what would your comment be to a statement like that?
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, I think I would go a little bit back to what I was said earlier in the sense that I think what's been really exciting about, you know, I think we've known for a long time where there's been growing understanding about what the long-term impact of investing in early learning and its real potential, which has been sown through some really wonderful studies to produce long-term savings. And what I think has been really great about the work in Oregon is it's taken a very long-term approach on how do we actually build a system that's really going to work for children and families and produce those outcomes. And that means that a lot of our work has been trying to get things like early learning hubs up and running, to get the Spark system up and running, and to build those pieces that I think are really going to be have the potential to be and are already showing to be the foundation for building an early learning system that will produce those results. So I guess what I would say is I worry about gotten so close to building this building to start taking it down. That would be my honest.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I didn't make the comments, so I'm just expressing comments that I've heard from some folks in the building. So is it fair? You know, a lot of times when we start new programs, there are startup costs.
Yes.
That you hope you don't have replicated in the next biennium. Are there some savings there that you were realizing when you put forward your 15% cut response or whatever?
Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, tried to point out in that number at the beginning, other than 3% of the funds, all the funds that we have go straight out to communities and community partners. So there's not a lot of back of the house expenses. And where there are more of those operational expenses, it's really in that licensing part of our responsibility around child care, and that's really all federal dollars.
Thank you.
So and we'll continue this conversation. Colleagues, I just want to call to your attention, and you have this in front of you, which is some summary overall of the budget before, so you can see as we're talking about this, and I might make a couple comments about Representative Bynum asking the question about the discussion. So in the education sub, when we heard the budgets, and had this discussion about what the governor had proposed, what other options might be, and then we held hearings. And at those hearings, just like we would at a policy hearing, we had the advocates, the stakeholders, all come in and talk to us what the consequences were of either making the investments or not making the investments. And so that information is available to the Budget Committee. The frustration with this oftentimes is often that leads to policy decisions, even though it's being discussed at the budget, and that's what's this difficulty of this process. We're the policy committee, so we don't necessarily get to hear the same discussions, but those discussions, too, have an impact on the policies that we're trying to, and that's part of the reason I wanted to have some of this conversation, just to have more of that conversation before we make the Ways and Means makes final decisions But it's a difficult process, and I can tell you that, yes, part of the decision, weight on the decision for what would be recommended potential, remember these are potential reductions, has to do with the amount of new increased investment made in the last biennium in these programs versus some other programs in the state budget. I want to reinforce what Dave said. This is a new program. We just started investing in the program, and obviously as you ramp it up, you're going to have to make more investments to do it. And the second thing we know about these programs, as we've heard in the policy discussions, we have multiple children and families that aren't being served currently. That I think we all agreed in listening to what the outcomes could be, should be served. So there's all of those things going on. But it's this budget process is what the budget process is. And once the budget's adopted, then the people in the department have to go back with the money that they're given, up or down, and then make that work for those programs, and that is best they can make it work. But that we ultimately make those decisions based on whatever information we can get at the time.
Do you still need me, or I'm happy to be in the audience and answer questions.
We might have more questions for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's look at this chart here. Do you have something to...
I'm just... Chair, trying to decide whether I chime in or not. I think for me, it's I'm a huge proponent of early learning. Always have been, always will be. But I think I'm going to go back a little bit onto what Representative Hayden shared. Just looking at that one entity and their budget for OHA, if it were to be looked at differently, and the inflationary rate changed or looked at, that's $1.3 billion, and we wouldn't even be needing to have this conversation. So it's a bit frustrating to me that further discussions aren't being had in those regards, and that we're having to have a conversation about not fully funding kids when those are the discussions that need to be occurring.
So let me just make a comment. So part of the reason I want to have this discussion is to talk about those kinds of things. So from my standpoint as the chair of committee, we members ought to be able, we have opinions and questions and things, and we ought to be able to express those. I appreciate this committee respecting each other and do it. So I appreciate what you said. And the reason that I wanted this sheet there, so that's exactly what we're talking about. So we can see, even though many of the conversations are going around cuts, even with those cuts, it's still an increase. It's still an increase over what the budget was before.
Which I think is a very valid point also.
Right, and so I appreciate Representative Hayden earlier raising that. And so that's part of these conversations we have to. Now, that does not mean, even if we use the inflation factor, 1.4 instead of what it is, that we could address all the things we'd like to address from a standpoint of programs. But the point of it is we're talking, that's right, we want to be very clear that what we're talking about here isn't, in most cases, rolling the budget back less than what it was in 2015. It's just not rolling it up as much as the current service level that we use would suggest.
Well said.
Okay.
So can we get that figure on the table? I asked it and he didn't know what that was, but can we have, what is it?
I'd like to have it for discussions.
Without the roll-up of those figures, what is it? Because when you say the inflationary cost and all of that, what is it? What is the actual without all those roll-ups?
See the adopted budget from last biennium.
From last? Which is?
Except for in the cases where there was some private funding or the last quarter or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
You can always
punch holes in, but
no, I know, but
in general.
Right.
So that would be...
If you see a huge bump up, it would be for some other kind of reason. Like that.
So I think what you're looking at is one, you know, if you take this whole pre-kindergarten... 146.9 versus 152.3.
Right. Exactly.
Recommended governor's budget. That is an increase.
Right. That is.
It may not be as much as gross domestic product of Oregon, but it's an increase.
So to remember it, there's also, so even if it didn't, so I'm going to go back to the connection between policy and or the budget. even if the budget were static, that we got the same amounts of money each time, as a policy committee, we could focus on certain policies and say to the budget committees, here's where we really want to see the focus, and if that means, in some cases, then something else that we don't think is as high a priority wouldn't get as much funding. I mean, there are other ways to address this and still not drive the cost up necessarily, but...
I just wanted to add one, my apologies, just add one clarification. The OPK number from going from legislatively adopted to CSL is not, in that case, is not just inflation because the legislature added some new money to OPK during the short session.
That's right.
So that increase actually reflects the additional fund, the dollars that were put into OPK during the 2016 short session. So there's more than CSL in that one. So my apologies. I just wanted to clarify on that one.
Do you know how much that was?
Is it six?
Yeah.
I believe that was six.
$6 million?
Yeah. No, actually, it should be a little. I think it was a little less than six. I'll get you the exact number on that.
Thank you.
And the number there on the preschool promise reflects the fact that the first was only 1 year in the first biennium, and so it's rolled up into 2 years.
Right.
The second for the next biennium. So if there, one of the things I want to... Chance, so if there's other questions or concerns you have, I want to make sure we capture those because we'll get a chance, I'll get a chance at the Ways and Means Sub, hopefully, to have some of those conversations. If we get to the point we're moving budgets before the last day, then we'll have the chance to have that conversation. Part of it's going to be the time. These are, as you all know, these are challenging and interesting times in our country and in our state. And we have a lot of work to do to get the, from my standpoint, to get the ship righted. I'm a strong proponent and supporter of early learning, and I think what we're just starting to make some of the investments we need to, because I believe long-term it is going to save us money and help families be successful. But unfortunately, we got to live with the funds we have and decide how we allocate those funds.
So,
go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. So when you go through this from the 2015-17 to the 2017-19, so Healthy Families, they were at 24, now they're at 24.8. Relief Nurseries, 8.6, they're at 8.9. Kindergarten Readiness went from 9.1 to 9.5. Early Learning Hubs went from 6.2 to 6, or 16.2 16. To 16.8.
Eight, correct.
Preschool Promise, we know, went from 17.5 to 35.7 because of the 1 year versus two.
Right.
Focus Child Care Networks went from 2.3 to 2.4.
Right.
So that goes back to the point that you made. While it looks as though we are making cuts,
right,
there is not one area, and again, huge proponent, huge advocate here, that is not actually receiving additional funds.
Right.
Am I understanding this
correctly? Again, some exceptions with the co-chair's framework, not with the governor's
recommendation. Right, with the co-chair's framework.
So let's go back. Right. Okay, so I'll go to co-chairs. Right. So is there any in here on the co-chairs? So...
Focus Child Care Networks.
Yeah.
Reduction.
There's actually an adjustment on the co-chairs framework.
There's several reductions. But
Healthy Families, too.
I don't understand the early intervention where it says co-chair frameworks add 1.5, and yet their number at 170 is less than the governor's recommended.
Okay, so if we go to co-chairs, it is much different. You're right.
Yeah, that's apologies. Where cuts are. That's where
my apologies.
Are.
I was looking at the
but
wrong.
But again, for the most part, the co-chairs' budget are a reduction in the increase amount.
Right, right.
That's not right. A reduction
in the
No, if you look at the second one, 124, the second column, is less than the 132, which was the legislatively adopt. That's before, right? I don't know why that went down.
Which page are you looking at?
Well, I'm looking at this one. This is lower. I'm comparing it to last year's. There's a few cases in which it's actually less. Also, the early intervention is actually less.
So the Office of Child Care, though, most of those funds are federal funds. So I don't know, David, is there a connection Anything else we're doing here with those funds that the federal funds might decrease because of something else we've done? Well, so if you look at the Office of Child Care, the current in the funds is $132 million in the current adopted, and all the across there, even the governor's adopted in the current, it shows $124 million. And I'm trying to understand, it's because it says most of the federal funds are directly transferred. So is there something we do that would decrease those versus just a formula that comes from the feds? What's the story there?
Chair Lively, committee members, we did. So in 2014, the federal government passed a new set of guidelines for CCDF that created a host of new state requirements. And so we had originally put in a $6.1 million transfer of money that previously would have gone to employment-related daycare to our operations in order to be compliant with the new fingerprinting and background check requirements and the other requirements. Since we submitted that budget, we've done some additional analysis and believe that the staffing costs for that will be lower than we anticipated. So we've been in communication with LFO, and we'll be sharing this with Ways and Means, Ed, and Human Services on Wednesday. Believe it'll be more like $4 million. We also looked at some other programs that we were running using CCDF. We don't believe we can still run with the new rules. And so we're zeroing out those programs, and those programs will those dollars will also go to employment-related daycare. And then there's one program that we're also proposing, teen parents, about $2.7 million to shift to DHS as part of employment-related daycare. So based on this work we've done in the communications, we believe that $6.1 million shift in funds is no longer necessary. Although we are also adding some additional work to employment-related daycare, so there'll be a little bit of compression for families from that. No, it was a little bit complicated answer.
No, but I remember now we had that conversation in the sub, and so now it brought it back to what the difference is there. So
again, this is not a reduction from the Fed, because this is the one category we're talking about is 100% federally funded.
Right.
And this is not a reduction in federal funding to that program. It's our allocation of those assets internally.
There's two pieces. There's both, Chair Lively, Representative Hayden. There's two pieces. There's both a federal contribution to employment-related daycare, and now, actually, after the 2015 legislative session, of quite substantial general fund investment in employment-related daycare. So there's two sets of dollars. So I think part of that is also about the general fund investment.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify, just because I was looking at the wrong. So I was not looking at co-chairs, so okay. I get that now.
Okay. So, Doug, have we already dug ourselves so deep we can't get out, or what?
I just want to make sure, Doug Wilson from LFO.
Thank you.
This is my table, and I worked with Kendra yesterday.
And he was watching, and I heard him running down the hall.
I wasn't running. at my age, I don't run that much anymore. On the early intervention, early childhood, the far right column does not pick up the federal funds. I just noticed that.
Oh, okay.
I didn't pick it up when I was looking at it. So you have another 30-some million dollars.
That's
there.
Why I cannot get this to add up. I was sitting here doing this, and
yes,
I'm like,
know,
okay,
yeah.
This is not adding up. So
I went and looked on the formula,
thank you.
And I forgot to do the sum of the federal
funds. That makes me feel better.
Add $30 million to that $170 million from the total funds, and you get it.
Then you get it.
And
well,
the
that's
difference
why I was
between the
why.
Governor's
okay.
budget and the co-chair framework on that same program, the governor's budget did recognize that they needed to add more than the CSL amount to get really up to true cost of the program, because that program has been thinned the last couple biennia just because of the cost of the program and the number of kids that are eligible.
So the co-chairs framework is at 199.6, just like the governor's and the current service level for the early intervention?
It will be just 1.5 million larger than that.
1.5, so it'll only be 172.1.
Yeah,
still a huge drop. It's a huge drop. They're not 30 million, it's just 1.5 million more.
No, the end figure, the total funds at the end on the co-chairs would be 200 million point six. 200.6 million. Is that right? 30. That's 30 million.
It would be just over 200.
Yeah, just be over 200. Right.
Question?
Oh, Doug, wait a minute.
Thank you.
Nice try. Nice try, but
don't run away. Don't run away yet. So you mentioned that in the particular case that the true cost, which I like that, true cost, you had to ratchet it up a little bit. In many instances, and maybe I'm assuming, that the true cost doesn't equal the current service budget. Do we ever ratchet that back down?
Current service level, Mr. Chair, excuse me, Representative Hayden, the current service level on programs like this is the standard inflation rate for that DAS works up. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, 3.2%. I have to go make sure. And I heard some of the discussion we had before. I'll let you go talk to the economist over at LEA for that discussion. In this particular program, early intervention, and it's mainly the early childhood special ed, we've been taking a look at that from the last biennium to this biennium, starting to take a look at the caseloads. And the governor's budget, we used, in terms of the current service determination, we used the standard set. But the governor's budget also had a policy package that sort of brought it up a little further to try to catch up to where it probably should be based on the program and how, what it's been in the past. The co-chairs didn't have that money, but it is on their list of, I think, actually number one in this area to add back to. The sub-chairs, I mean, not the co-chairs, full.
So to summarize, yes, sometimes we do a policy to increase, but I haven't seen policies to decrease on true cost.
Well, when you have reduction options, Mr. Chair and Representative Hayden, you have policy decisions to make.
I'll buy that.
Are there any other discussions or questions on that? So, members, so we've had this, and I think you understand the figures here. So we obviously don't know where we're going to end from a standpoint of the budget and what it's going to be. But so part of the conversation I wanted to make sure we get a chance to, as we heard all the discussion earlier in our committees, we talked about different programs. And the goal here isn't to pit one program against the other. But if we had to make a choice, and not to take money away from somebody, but if we had to make a choice from a standpoint, if we had a chance to add something, what, you know, and we heard most every program we heard, whether it be ERDC, or, I mean, there's all those that they don't have enough money to address the caseload that's been identified to do. But if we had an opportunity to say, well, we think here's where a strategic investment, a new investment, an increased investment would help turn the tide even more than some of the other things. Do we have a sense of where that would be? Do we all think there's a different priority that we'd want to? And maybe we do, and that's all right. I mean, that's what's so hard about this business, is they're all good programs. I think we all see there's results there, but at some point somebody's going to be making some budget choices.
I have another question, which might get kicked down to LFO. If the personal kicker kicks,
is
that an across-the-board 2% reduction? I'm asking because I don't know the answer. Is that when that happens? And it happened 2015, might happen 2017. Mm-hmm. Is that an across-the-board 2% reduction of all budgets, or is that pick and choose? Sorry.
So I might, as Doug's coming up, I might, if I have this correct, the last time it did when we were here, it didn't impact the current biennium, it impacted the next biennium. I may have that wrong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hayden, and I'm not going to go into discussion of the kicker because I'm not an expert in that area, but the kicker is a change in revenue.
Correct.
So you then have to make choices
about where you
on whether or not or what or how you cut your budget. But the kicker is a revenue question. or issue. And then you as policymakers get to decide how to react to that change.
So it's not across the board, in other words.
No, it does. Okay. You have to make a decision now. Across the board is an option.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Okay. All right. Thank you. That answers the question.
Not a formula.
Yeah.
Pretty simple stuff. Anything else? Words of wisdom, questions, concerns? You all want to join the budget committees and keep having this conversation?
No.
So
I may have missed some of this, but sorry to try to zero in on something. The early learning hubs went from the current service level of 19.6, which the governor had in her budget as well, down 20% to 16.2.
Funds,
and it said that's it partly as a result of last biennium it had a significant program increase. So is it, could you explain what that would result in? Like what kinds of things? This is the early hub personnel that are going to get cut?
So David, programs? Could you talk a little bit about that money that goes to the hubs, how it's allocated or spent? I think, I don't know if we saw a breakdown, but there's
that's the final.
Most of it goes out to fund programs, I believe.
Early learning of total funds.
Chair Lively, Representative Kinnegeier, the hubs are
20%
the hubs have a shared set of goals and metrics to which they direct their investments, and most of the money, I don't have the exact number on me, goes out to community investments. But there is also just a core cost of having a hub, right? And this, most of our hubs actually have fairly small staffing. Some of our rural hubs, it's as few as 1 to 2 persons who are running a hub. So the impact will be a little bit different across hubs, but I think the most direct impact would be on reduction in those investments towards school readiness and healthy and stable attached families that hubs are making in their community would be the most direct impact. What those investments look like differ from hub to hub because that's part of the whole model of having the hub is to have those community plans and community choices. So it would be a pretty differential impact. Since most of them have pretty lean, if not really small staffs, the majority of that impact, I think, would be in the community investments because I think you get to a point where you just need some minimal amount of organizational structure to function.
And this would be an area where some of the questions Representative Hayden raised earlier about the impacts of rural versus urban, where depending on those rural hubs in particular and their smaller size and all, they may be disproportionately impacted by a cut versus the ones in the urban because they have less abilities to get less money to begin with. So from a goes back from kind of the policy standpoint, I mean that's the levels you get to thinking about. If, quote, we say we're going to cut it by a certain percentage and you say everybody has to cut by that, well, how that's proportioned may have a significant difference in rural versus urban hubs.
And I'll say it again. I think to talk about the inequity, there's in larger counties, they have other programs that can kind of backfill all this. And in many rural counties, it's this or nothing.
Yeah.
And I've helped manage these all these programs as a collective whole in a big county, and I see how it's like a little flowing river. It just goes downstream to where there's the openings and the services. And I have a real problem with the fact that I don't understand why it's this way, but there are very different budgets and very different silos. But, you know, what happens to Babies First program and Cocoon program and all these other programs is going to affect this. So I don't know how we put all those pieces together.
Any other questions, comments, discussions? I appreciate this conversation, and you're getting a little better knowledge on this and us understanding the connections between policy and budgets because they are directly connected, and I share your frustration with But we're not the only committee, of course, that has good programs in that. But you're absolutely right, they're all linked. And the good news is in the 4 or 5 years we've been doing this early learning more focus, we've learned a lot of information about the value, and we're making progress. And it would be a shame to do something that stalls the progress or, even worse so, backs us up from what we're doing. But, right, they're all linked. Anything else people have at this point?
I think my overall comment would just be, as I look at this, it sounds like the governor tried to hold harmless yep. the area of early childhood, because pretty much it goes with current service level.
Right.
The co-chair framework, there was the only place where there's no reduction is relief nurseries and OPK Head Start. And Office of Child Care, I don't really still understand that, because it went from 132 down to 124, but there's a transfer of funds, so I don't understand whether that's held harmless. But everywhere else, there's either 10, 12, 20% reduction or 100% reduction in the co-chair's budget. Right? Just trying to understand the big picture.
In the co-chair's...
In the co-chair's framework.
Framework.
It's a 10, 12, 20, or 100%
right.
cut in every area except two. Is how I read it.
But that is, again, a reduction of the increase.
Well, in some cases, it's a reduction of No. So if you take, let's just go down the line. Healthy families went from 28.1 last year to 27. So it's a reduction in the framework. So it's less than actually last year's. Office of Child Care, again, I don't understand because it's transferred funds, but it dropped from last year, 132, so not continuing service level, to 124. The kindergarten readiness went from last year, so I'm not talking about inflation, CSL, next year. I'm saying from last year's budget, 9.1 down to
7.6.
Early Learning Hub, down from last year, 19.3, not CSL, not inflation, however you might argue with inflation, down 16.2. Focus Child Care, 2.3. In every
the
single
preschool
instance.
Preschool promise is where a lot of that was soaked up, went from 17 up to 32.
And that was partly
but
because
needed,
that was
yeah.
the first year of the biennium. So in every single, I appreciate your comments about inflation, how that's factored, and whether we're giving too much to inflation given our tax structure. And I could argue from the other side on that, how our revenue structure should be keeping up with growth, and that is why our corporate income taxes remained exactly flat for 30 years. But in any case, regardless of that, I just want to impress upon us the significant reduction from the co-chair's framework from what we've been doing in the past,
this past
even taking away CSL inflation. It's a significant reduction.
Agreed.
Okay.
But just one comment is the co-chair's framework is designed not particularly aligned with the governor's recommendation, and I don't believe that the co-chair's framework it will be the final budget that we use. In other words, I think there's some other incentives happening in the co-chair's framework. I'll just leave it at that.
Mr. Chair and members, first of all, on the Office of Child Care, the difference between the 15-17 and the 17-19 is much of that can probably be explained by having some carry forward in the child care block grant. We may have some of that this biennium. We're not sure what that amount is, and it has not been totally factored into this yet. And keep in mind, in terms of the governor's recommended budget, she did protect early learning type of programs.
Yeah,
but she also assumed a different set of revenues in her budget. So you're looking at two different starting points, for a lack of better terms.
Thank you.
There are investments elsewhere. This is only represents a relatively small portion of the entire state budget.
That's right, because the governor in her recommended budget had identified new revenues of $800 million or something in order to be able to make a recommendation.
That's right.
And while the co-chairs came out, was within identified current
without
revenues.
Without revenue. Right. Can I ask one more question?
Sure, go ahead.
So, before you run away? So there's also just a number that's a little out of whack. It might just be a typo. Under healthy families, governor's recommended total funds, $145 million. It's the Healthy Families Governor's Recommended Total Funds.
Looks like it picks up an extra number in there, so yeah. we'll revise
Something.
This. Put it together rather quickly.
No, yeah, no, I assume that was just a
yeah, I think that,
formula.
You're right.
Right. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Anything else about the budget? So as the process goes forward for Ways and Means and the Education Sub, since I serve it, I encourage any of you, if you hear or see things that want to make sure it gets expressed on behalf of this policy committee, that you let me know so we can make sure that gets as part of those conversations until the gavel, the final gavel. Okay. Thanks. So I'm going to close the informational hearing on the budget, and I'm going to open an informational hearing on the first chamber bill. So here I have in front of you.
Where's the reduction? Only two places. That one. That's
one,
the only
two.
Places where it's a scene.
Then you go. There's only five of them.
Yep.
The bills that
that's a mistake.
Have gone to Ways and Means.
So
and so, given that there's only five of them,
only two places,
and given some of these are have come. So just given the fact that they're, from a standpoint of total impact in the budget, they're not substantial. And some have been bills that came from the committee and some came from the governors or the divisions that for correction. I guess all I want to, rather than saying we're going to rank these, what I just want to know from people is your personal. So if you had to, and I'm going to go and pick on the ones that the committee actually. So let's look at the court care. We have the task force, and I don't know if I've seen what the fiscal is. Have we seen what the fiscal is? But all the task forces are going to sit down there, wait until we get through the whole budget process, and decide if we want to spend any money on task force. And then we have the kindergarten, the grants for kindergartens, and I think those are the three. Those are the three, I guess, from the standpoint of that we, this committee and that have potential budget impacts. And so all I want to do is provide you the chance if out of those three, if we had to make a choice, would you want to make a choice or just want to tell Ways and Means we want them all?
Can you have you or assistant read off the numbers of those? I just want to make sure I'm like the court care you're talking about, House Bill 3067A, right?
Right. Right. And then House Bill 2985A and House Bill 2957A.
Just those three.
Just those three, right.
And we're ignoring the front side
and
the back side.
Well, the others are substantial, and they're not new investments necessarily. These are actually, we're asking for new investments, and so that's where if we get down to the point in the Ways and Means where we've got everything covered and there's some money, then we're going to have to make an argument why our new investments recommended are different than everybody else that's put them in there. So I guess that's all I'm looking for.
Well,
go ahead.
From my perspective, the court care is my highest priority of the three, if that's what you're asking.
That's what I'm asking.
Well, you signed on to 2957.
Right. Well, I can have more. But court care, I mean, they all are important to me,
right, yeah.
But if I was to prioritize, court care would come first, that would come second, and the task force would be third.
Okay. I'm going to do whatever she says.
So one of the things about court care is there's already a program, and so this one isn't, we're not asking for a new program, we're asking to expand something
spend
that
another,
already exists.
Right. It's
out
different.
There.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
So, and I'm not arguing one way or the other, I'm just saying that's
right.
Part of the value
yep.
of that particular
so
investment.
So, I agree with that. I know the Multnomah Court Care, and I agree with it. I do think that, again, we've studied a lot about child care and the importance of quality child care, and then all of a sudden, bang, we have this Department of Education K-12, and I think the value of the reason I feel strongly about the 1 to 15 in really low income is because that is such a critical, and it's an ongoing. It's not kind of a one-off when the person comes in for one time. As much as I support court care, I also want to see some systemic thinking in our early childhood through K-12, and I feel like that's in that direction. But, you know, I hate pitting them against each other. I think they're both very important.
They're different.
They're both very important.
Representative Hayden.
So I usually think about things differently. I try and decide what I can do without first. Mm-hmm. So I would take the task force off, 2985.
Okay,
and then you
agree.
Have
then you have a very tough decision here between the court care and helping feed hungry kids. And I
No, it's not helping feed. I mean, it's reducing the ratio in really in
focusing on
schools that are
90%,
right?
But you're talking about schools that are 90% that are eligible for the free lunch.
Right.
So
right.
Helping low poverty. I would have to fall in 2957, but it's a tough choice.
Are we only allowed one?
When I look at 2957, I want to see what comes out of that. I want to see, are we going to move the dial? What happens if we actually, you know, do this? Mm-hmm. We've talked about it for so long and we haven't done it.
I just want to see what
result will we get out of that? Mm-hmm. But I also love the court care. I don't know that I could choose between those two. I think they're both great.
I think you have strong support for both.
That's where I am as well.
It sounds like maybe we have put the third Bynum, piece
did you have
in place.
comment or question?
Yes, I had a question on 2957. What school districts were impacted the most? Where is that going? So it's clear to me 3067 is Marion and Polk County. Where's 2957?
Well, it'd be all over the state.
Schools
that have that. I've got schools in my district.
Oak Ridge.
How many?
Oak Ridge.
Like, help me.
There's poor
Should
schools
I go back
everywhere.
To the presentation?
No, we actually just got a list recently.
Yeah.
If Somebody I can't find it right now, I'll send it. We just got a list. Representative Hack asked Department of Education for a list of who would be eligible for this.
Oh, so we did get the list?
Yes.
So my question is, as a matter of impact, which would have a greater impact? So one is a matter of addressing trauma, basically, and the other is a matter of addressing achievement.
There are different kinds of impact.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a personal judgment call, but
it's like
if we had to justify one or the other.
If 2957 were funded fully, it would be a substantial investment versus the $200,000 we asked for. Any of this is not to argue one or the other, but from a standpoint as they're considered in the budget and at the end, certainly to fund. To do that, because there are a lot of schools in the state that fit that criteria. So to be able to do it, so people, what could happen is there could be an amount of funds set, and then ODE or somebody would have to set up to be grant applications, and they would judge the grants and just decide out of the money they have how they could allocate it. But in theory, the fiscal on that would be much higher, but that's not a reason not to support it. But John, did you have?
So your question on prioritization. Is that predicated on the assumption that we're funding K-12 at $8.4 billion and we're doing other things? Or what's the premise for the question?
But I appreciate that question. We had,
and I'm not being facetious.
No, Zena and I had this discussion because that's part of the in doing that. That's part of the issue. So, right, if K-12 isn't funded at what is viewed as a level they can just keep doing what they're doing, in order to fund this, we'd be taking money away. It would have to come out of the same place. And so in a sense, it would be a step back from what they're doing. So my assumption would be, from a standpoint of arguing for this, that there would be adequate funding for K-12. Because if there isn't adequate funding for K-12, it's 8.4, whatever it is, we're not going to have discussions about new programs.
Yeah.
Hope we're just going to have discussions about where we cut that.
So then
it would be that those funds would be there through that, and then there would be an ability to add something to it, and what would we from this committee
so
want to add?
Do you want to hear some of who's would be part of it? Do you want to hear some of who would be eligible?
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
There's a school in Beaverton. Mm-hmm. There's probably three or four in Bend, Lapine, Bethel, Centennial, Central Point, Eagle Point, Eugene, Falls City, Forest Grove, Grants Pass, Gresham, Hillsboro, Hood River, Jefferson County, Klamath County, LeGrand, Klamath Falls, Lebanon, Lincoln County, Lowell, Mapleton, Medford, Myrtle Point, North Clinton. These are not everybody would get it. These are those that would be eligible, though.
But, I guess what I'm saying is that these are schools with 90%.
Ontario, Portland, Park Rose.
Portland.
Portland.
Prospect, everywhere. Redmond, Reedsport, Reynolds, Salem-Keizer, Springfield, Sweet Home, Three Rivers, Woodburn, Umatilla.
Every one of our communities has poverty issues, and they're often cases concentrated around schools within that. But that's
several of these have 94.5.
Isn't that shocking?
And it above is.
Because we actually thought by limiting it to 90% or above, there'd be like five in the state.
Yeah.
That's what we thought.
Yeah, because we were like, this is too, we're narrowing it way, we're making it too narrow.
We're making it impossible.
So these would be, but they also have to have the facility to accommodate.
Right, to accommodate.
So and then they would have
the
to
facility,
apply.
Facility, that would, and they have to apply. And
So when they said they're applying for a grant, mm-hmm. and then I see that that comes from out of the general fund. Okay.
So it'd be a competitive process, and they would have to show that they have the facility and what they're going to do and so on.
So the other thing I would just add about that, and I support this, and this makes great sense, but here's, sitting on the education sub, one of the things we've heard a lot from school districts is whether the state or the federal, we provide grants to get programs set up, but we don't provide long-term funding.
Right.
And so when the grant runs out, if the state hasn't increased funding or some other way the districts have been able to, then the program is jeopardized in order to keep the program going. Now, this might be an example because of the value of lowering that, where it would make sense to make sure they keep investing in this because the value is there and have to make a cut someplace else. But that's always the problem. And in recent years, our school districts have got more and more dependent on grants, whether it be federal or state, to start programs. And then in a couple years are faced with how do they sustain the program because there's not increased funding. But doesn't suggest we don't do it, but it's just...
Which is a valid point. And some will argue also that... It isn't so much about class size as it is about professional development. Great teachers and giving the supports around teachers. So,
and I think that's the point of why a pilot, you take a school, there's a lot of schools here, you could take one and lower the ratio and compare it to some counterparts and see, did that investment make as much difference as a teacher training?
And that's
before
right.
you make a policy statewide saying low-income schools above 90% should have...
Right.
So from a funding standpoint, it might make sense to do four or five, a couple in the urban, and a couple, three in the rural, and compare them and see if that's right, what the consequences would be.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Don't the schools get extra money per student when they qualify, when they have a certain, those schools are Title I schools?
Yes.
They do get a little bit extra for like reading assistance and things like that. Not enough to lower a ratio.
There is in our allocation formula, so there's additional points for students' disabilities, special challenge. So there are different, but it doesn't amount to a substantial amount, except in very rare cases for certain students. For those severely challenged in that, there's a substantial increase from the state school fund. But otherwise, so there's also additional state school funds for English learners in school districts where they have in that. But overall, it doesn't fill in the gaps that most school districts face. But so I'm not, I'm not suggesting that we have to choose and say one or the other. All I'm saying is at some point, hopefully we get to the point we have the chance to argue for some new investments. And these are the two, I think, as we've had this conversation, and I agree with everybody, the last thing we'd argue for is probably the task force.
Yep.
I would hope every other group would be the same way, that we wouldn't want to spend money on task force as long as we have.
Yeah.
Switching for programs.
So, Mr. Chair, I think in terms of ease, if you had to pick on ease, it would be the court care.
Mm-hmm.
But I think... Because it's not hard to ramp that down. People hopefully are not consistent users of the court system. We hope. But the impact of 2957, I think, could be pretty dramatic. I fear the bouncing up and down that we would do. But the need for those kids is extreme, and I think that if we were to able to get a multitude of sites, I don't know how many, that would have impact around the state and not just two counties. Yeah, so.
So I just wanted to make the comment on, keep in mind that the 2957 includes free lunch, people who are qualified for that, and under mm-hmm. free lunch, you're talking about people that are on SNAP and mm-hmm. TANF, food distribution programs, and for the Native Americans. When you talk about your reduced lunch, you open that up what much wider, because it's putting those two yeah. categories together. So if I had a recommendation, yes. I would say free lunch programs.
Right. Okay. To narrow it.
Narrow it to free lunch yes. programs, and you'll see most of those school districts drop
That's right.
off.
That's absolutely right.
And you might even have to expand it to 85% or something like that, because there's a significant difference between reduced. Mm-hmm. Almost everybody gets reduced. I mean, there are some exceptions, but free is a different story. And the other thing that I wanted to point out is that a lot of times our more metropolitan, and I would put Marion, Polk County in that. You know, I come from much more rural counties where Cottage Grove is the largest. I mean, people talk about what's your population center in your district. And I said, I don't have any heavily populated areas, and I don't have any lightly populated areas in my district. You know, so the fact is, or the point is that the county, I mean, you could look at it from the point, the county that's doing this 200,000 program, you know, and this is not to be unfair to them, but they already have a lot more resources available than these other more rural or economically developed areas in the state. You know, sometimes when we talk about health care and Multnomah, we talk about the embarrassment of riches that these counties have to do for mental health, which is fantastic, like the Unity program. But the you know, then you take compare that to Klamath Falls, and it's just a stark difference. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I feel like the 2957 spreads it out for more opportunity, but that's just my feelings.
Great. Anything else? But I appreciate the comment. It goes back to the issue you raised earlier about how do we move the dial. And certainly some of those rural have so much less of any other types of support services. That,
yeah.
Right.
In so many ways. Yeah.
Okay. It's very helpful. And if we get to the point, it looks like we have the chance at the Budget Committee to talk about adding these. I'll make sure I come back to you and let you know, and then we'll see if there's something else we want to add.
Good.
If it's very helpful having the conversation. Anything else? Closed information. Anything else?